Hello there. It's James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Johnny Test,
Fred Flintstone,
and one of my personal favorites, Leonardo. And you are listening to Epic Tales from the Sewer. It's totally awesome. Turtle power. Go, go, go.
Party wagon and hold on to your pizza.
Welcome, everybody, to Epic Tales from the Sewers. I'm your most excellent host, Justin, and here with me is my co-host, Mr. Eric Will.
Hi, Justin. How you doing today?
Good, good. We got a guest, man.
Yeah, a guest. I mean, we've been waiting for a while.
Yeah, no, I agree. Our guest today is an artist that both Eric and I are pretty excited to talk to. He has graced the covers of TMNT in some iconic Last Ronin variants, as well as Dark Horse Presents, Savage Dragon, Invincible, Transformers for Hasbro, and his series Johnny Raygun, Kira the Jungle Girl, Electric Black, Mr. Rich Woodall.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Everyone says they're doing great. So, you know, thanks. you know, I mentioned this off air, but it's just the funniest thing in how we met you at Granite State, and like you were actually the table that was kind of like directly behind us, you and Joe Schmalke, and literally this year we did kind of like a vision board for who we wanted to have on the podcast. You were the top of the vision board. You were literally the first name that was on there. We got to get Rich Woodall on. So,
I really appreciate it. That's crazy though.
out of like everything else, and it's like other names on the list. Vanilla Ice, Tom Wall, you know, it's like people we want to try to get on. So it's like you're in like big, like star power there.
Yeah, yeah, we've been talking about it for a while. So I'm just putting it out there.
That's a good list. And you know, sitting behind you guys, you know, we got a chance a couple times to chat and had really good conversations. So, yeah, so I know this will be a good time.
It's busy con. You know, it was a lot of fun. I saw some of the artwork you're working on, a really cool Captain America sketch that you
were doing. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. Getting commissions at shows is always a good time.
I didn't realize it would be a lot more expensive or less expensive, I should say, than what I thought, because I'm used to, you go to C2E2 out here and I go and like, oh, how much for a sketch? And they're like, I don't know, $275. Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? And most guys are like, I don't know, $50. I'll put like a head in your sketchbook. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's I guess it's inflation out here.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Prices. I know. I just raised all my prices just recently. You know, sitting with all these other guys. You know, we all look at each other's prices and like, oh, you should charge more. You're worth more than that. You know, we go back and stuff. So, yeah,
I agree. And I think it's one of those things too, where it's like, as a fan, it's like, you don't mind, you know, like if I walk up to someone like Joe Quesada and he's going to charge me $800 to do like a Daredevil head sketch, I'm like, look, man, I get it, you know, but that's like a little exorbitant. But, you know, like if he was to charge like $250, I'd be like, okay, fair, you know, something like that. Sure. It's like 10 minutes, dude, you know,
right.
not to seriously downplay it, but it's like, you got to know your audience and stuff like that too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole commission thing, it's, you know, there's a lot of factors in there. It's aftermarket. It's, you know, what you value your work at, how much work you put into it, and that kind of stuff. But yeah. It's definitely a weird thing. Like I've had guys that, you know, they've been coming to me for commissions at shows for 15 years. And, you know, I was charging probably $20, you know, for a full body, you know, 15 years ago. And now they're like, oh, well, why can't you give me the price you gave me 15 years ago?
We were talking to somebody like that. I forget who it was, Eric, who we were talking to, who said that, oh, maybe it was Camillo. We were talking to Camillo, and he said that whenever he gets those original OGs, he always charges them the same. He's like $20, you know, because they were the people from the beginning. So,
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I have like friend discounts that I'll you know, like they've been forever. It's kind of
you're a good area them. Though. You're like right in the area. Do you do a lot of Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, I mean tomorrow the next town over, Dover, they're doing the dedication for the Turtles, the manhole cover. So yeah,
we had James Lane on earlier in the summer. Cool. he told all of our listeners about it. We're excited. Kevin's going to be there. He helped design it. So and you're going to be there. That's awesome.
I think like James. I said, it's like a five minute drive for me. So
must be nice.
kind of cool. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing about this area is, you know, the Turtles started next town over, and the guy who did the very first Turtles convention, it wasn't a Turtles convention at that point, it was a comic convention, but the Turtles guys showed up, was Ralph DiBernardo, and he is doing a 40th anniversary of that convention next year, and he's my local comic shop guy. Like,
that's cool.
He's the one who paid for Johnny Raygun when we were publishing that, you know, 20 years ago. Wow.
This is Jetpack Comics, right?
Jetpack Comics, yep.
Yep. I was going to ask you what your affiliation was, because you did the Jetpacks covers, I believe, starting out for Last Ronin.
Yeah, I do a lot of Jetpack. So Ralph, when I first moved back to New Hampshire, Ralph was running, he was managing a smaller store called Paperback Bazaar in Somersworth, New Hampshire, where I live, and became friendly with him through the comic shop. And then Matt Talbot and I started Johnny Raygun, and Ralph was kind enough to blow all his money on publishing Johnny Raygun for us. He sank a lot of money into it, and we've been like good friends ever since. And you know, when Jetpack started, you know, Paperback Bazaar shut down, and so Ralph was out of a job, starting up Jetpack. I gave him like 12 long boxes of comics to help him have some back issues and stuff. And he's the guy's awesome. And he's without him, I don't know where I would be, because I wouldn't have done any Turtles covers probably. You know, he and Larry from Larry's Comics got me that first TMNT number 22, I think it was.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that like was, I have it right here.
Yeah. So I owe a lot to Ralph, and he continually gives me covers to do for Jetpack. Whether or not they make money is debatable, I guess.
Well, I mean, all the Turtles books sell eventually. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like you can't walk into most places and find back issues of the IDW series.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll find an annual. Maybe you'll find something that's a year old, but they're gone. So it's something where it's like it's people hold on to them. So your issue 2022 is in someone's collection, and it's, you know, in a bag and a board, and it's someone's. It's not going anywhere. So
yeah. Yeah, you know, it's definitely
on eBay, but you know,
that's one that comes around every once in a while. But yeah, I think that one's a hard one to find.
I've noticed that myself because I was just looking for it. So. But you just did an Armageddon game, right? Was one of those covered?
I think that was one of the last one. The last one I did was the Last Ronin Lost Years. But yeah, I did Armageddon game. Was it number? I don't remember what number it was.
I think it's one of the later ones, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. I think so. That one I actually did. I drew one cover, and then my buddy Chris Campana drew one, and he didn't have anybody to color it, so I colored his cover. So that was kind of fun to, you know, I don't usually color other people's stuff, so it was kind of nice to, you know, get to do that a little bit. I never feel like I'm very good at coloring other people's things, but I think I did an okay job on that one.
Yeah, well, Chris Campana is a former Granite State sketch-off champion as well. So,
yeah, he's pretty awesome. The guy is—he's working for Marvel now.
Yeah, the Spider-Man stuff is really good.
Yeah, Yeah. He's very excited to be, doing Spider-Man stuff and just working for Marvel in general. So that's pretty excited for him.
Well, let's talk about your history with comic books and all that. What got you started off in kind of the world of comics? Like, what was your gateway into that world?
Yeah, so it's a weird thing. So I've always, as far back as I can remember, comics were around me, and it was a lot when I was really, really young. It was like G.I. Joe comics and Transformer comic and Star Wars.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Kind of stuff. I remember when I was, I don't know how old I was. It was early 80s. My parents, in the old Sears catalog, they had like a Marvel comic sampler, and my parents got that for me for Christmas, and it had like two issues of everything they published that year.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. It was awesome. So I got like John Romita Jr. X-Men in there. I got John Byrne Fantastic Four. Those are the ones that I remember.
That's like the Sharon Ventura era, where it's like, hey, that's not Ben Grimm as the Thing. Who's that? It's like, oh, that's his girlfriend.
Oh, no. This was. I'm trying to. Dr. Doom was in some of it, but it was before She-Hulk joined the team. It was still Ben as the Thing.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, it was very, very cool. I remember my mom reading me some of those, like, for bedtime stories. And then it wasn't until like 87. I moved around a lot as a kid, and I remember I moved to this town called Stuttgart, Arkansas, and rode my little Huffy bike to the 7-Eleven that was a couple blocks away, and I picked up this book right here, Classic X-Men number 17.
Oh, nice.
And this was, for some reason, this like popped off the shelf, and I was just like, oh my God, like, what is this? Who's this crazy naked guy, basically?
Is that signed by Claremont?
It's signed by Claremont and John Bogdanov.
Who
drew the cover, yeah. And, you know, it's got the circus things and everything, and I was hooked. And from there, like, I just started buying every Marvel comic I could get my hands on, but mostly X-Men stuff, right?
Yeah, I feel like I was the same way. I had a huge, huge, huge draw to the X-Men, like, right around the time that Pride of the X-Men cartoon came out. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was great.
Game. Eric, yep. you must have played the arcade game, right? The six player where you could play as Dazzler and...
Right. I think I played. I don't know if I played that one, but I did play the Capcom one with X-Men. Oh, yeah. I forget which one it was. I want to say it was Street Fighters and X-Men.
They had actually the six player X-Men, or at least a four player X-Men at Granite State, like up in the back. I was like, oh man, if I had time, I would have gone over and played that thing. I always pick Dazzler because when else are you going to get to play as Dazzler?
That's very true. And that was probably the blue costume, right?
Like, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Iconic.
Yeah. I don't know. I play so many damn arcade games back in the day.
Some cool ones.
I've lost a lot of quarters.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. Still do it.
So you were a Marvel guy way back, right?
Yeah.
Into the X-Men. Did you ever get into DC at all? Like, were you, because I mean, Bogdanov, right from that, would go on to do Superman with
Superman.
With Wheezy, with
Simonson. No, I
Afterburn, which
yeah,
it wow, was really connected here.
Yeah, it wasn't until much later that I got in. I mean, I was probably I was 13 when I got into the X-Men. It was probably until I was like 20 before I kind of expanded into well, you know what happened? So through the Marvel stuff, I started following artists like Jim Lee was my favorite, and McFarlane and Liefeld and all the Image guys, right?
Yeah.
So I went from Marvel to Image, and then, you know, those were the two companies that I would buy stuff from. And at the time, to me, DC was kind of boring. I think one of the first books I got from DC, I guess I wasn't 20, I was like 16. Bart Sears was doing Eclipso.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I don't know if you guys remember the one that had the gem on the cover.
Yeah, with like the weird sort of coloring.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that was probably, that was the first DC comic I remember buying. I probably bought issues here and there of other things, but I probably went back and I bought the McFarlane like Batman books and stuff like that. But yeah, I think that's about when I started slowly dipping my toe into DC, but it really wasn't until I was older, you know, after I got into the, so when I was 18, I got hired by Fruit of the Loom Sports and Licensing. And it was there that I was in a studio with about 30 other artists. And some of those guys got me into, they're like, oh, have you read this? Have you read this? You know?
So they're like, check out The Watchmen or check out like Dark Knight Returns. And
yeah, totally. It was that kind of stuff. And different artists. Like, again, I was such an image guy. Like, I wanted to be Jim Lee really, really badly. And that's, you know, that was the style that I was shooting for. And then a friend of mine, Jim McDermott, who was an inker, and he did, he used to work for Deke Animation. He did a lot of the designs for the real Ghostbusters. He did a lot the monster designs. Guy was incredible. He brought in a Bernie Wrightson book, and that just blew my mind. Like, oh my God, you can do that, you know?
So the scariest monsters you can think of, and, you know, Swamp Thing and like use of ink and shadow and negative space, you know, it's like pre Mignola, for like Hellboy and all that. It's like, what was there? It's like, it's Bernie Wrightson.
It was Bernie Wrightson. Yeah. And that made me stop wanting to be Jim Lee. And then I wanted to be Bernie Wrightson, you know? And that just blew my mind wide open. And then books like Starman with Tony Harris were super, super, you know, left a big impression on me. And
I can kind of see that too, because your work is really clean, you know, and it's not like Wrightson in that sense,
right.
You know, but it's like super clean lines and in like everything is very like segmented. It doesn't like bleed into it like a Wrightson would. But like Tony Harris, if you think of like Starman or Ex Machina, you know, I can see like, even kind of like I could easily have put your art into that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, those guys were huge influences on me. All the Gaijin guys, you know, Cully and
Cully Hamer, yeah.
Yeah, and Still Freeze and Dave Johnson and Jason Pearson. Like, that was kind of, you know, after I got past the Image guys, it was Wrightson and the Gaijin guys. And
They're criminally underrated. I mean, Still Freeze and all that. It's like, man.
I mean, technique, like looking at them just for technique is I can look at their pages all day long. Just awesome.
So anyone's listening, I know we're getting into some deep weeds with art here. We're some big art nerds, but like, check this stuff out. Like, there's a lot of stuff that you could see. It's like, you go look at Stealth Freeze's, like, just look at a picture of Batman or Black Canary or something like that. You'll see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The use of color, the shading, everything. And it's like, it's just absolutely gorgeous. So
yeah, absolutely. You know,
that's cool. So, Marvel, you've done some stuff for Image. So working with Savage Dragon, working with Invincible and all that. I think your style is perfect for Invincible.
Thank you.
It's really good with that. That must've been interesting to kind of come home to the company that you were really into.
Yeah. And a lot of that I owe to Matt Talbot, my partner on Johnny Raygun. When we were doing Johnny Raygun, Matt had somehow figured out, if you just talk to Eric Larson, he'll let you do something for him. So you know, this is back in the days of message boards and stuff. And,
okay.
You know, Matt and I became a team. I was a penciler, he was an inker. We both wrote together, and we started doing stuff for Eric, like pinups and backup stories and stuff like that. And it was really, really cool. It opened up a lot of doors for us that, you know, it that was back at the time where people were running a lot of pinups in books.
Yeah.
And so anytime a new Image book was coming out, we would like rush to message the creator like, "Hey, Rick Remender, do you mind can we send you a pinup?" And we would send them the pinup, and a lot of times they would publish it. So that was, and that's kind of what happened with Kirkman. You know, we had, I'm trying to remember now which came first. I can't remember if he did he do Super Patriot before he did Invincible or vice versa.
I think Super Patriots first. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we started talking to Robert through Super Patriot, and we got a pinup done in one of his Super Patriots. And then, you know, we loved Invincible. I'm a huge superhero fan. As much as I love like the dark horror stuff, like superheroes are where my heart is. When I saw Invincible, and it was such a different take on superheroes at the time.
I cannot wait to start watching season two, which just came out like last Friday.
Yeah.
So I've just been waiting, cause I'm going to blow through it so quick, yeah. You know, and we waited so long, and it's been in production for 6 years.
I know, that's crazy that it's taken that long.
We had friends talk to Michael Dorn, and they're like, "What's it like doing this voice?" He's like, "I did that vocal track 5 years ago."
Oh my
God. And it was like, that was a year ago. It's like, oh
yeah, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah. And you just never have any idea. It's like, where has this been? It's been in like productive
limbo. Yeah. Yeah. COVID. And yeah, mm-hmm. That's crazy.
It's perfect now with an actor strike. Get it out.
Right. Time. Yeah.
You know, it's, exactly. You don't have to pay anybody. There's no writers. Everything is like, it's already done.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's interesting too. Like that. So you're a writer and you're an artist. Yeah. So, do you have anything that, that you would have like adapted into like a screenplay for like a television or anything? Like, has that been something?
We had some interest in Electric Black, for a little bit. We had a contract with, an animation group that, the guys who did Rick and Morty, the first, I can never remember the name of the place. Anyway,
Harmon, like Dan Harmon's company.
No, it's the guys who actually did the animation.
Oh,
Starburn Industries. We had a deal with them for a year, and they were going to develop it into a cartoon. Joe and I were pretty excited about it. You know, we weren't really thinking cartoon, but like, hey, this. To do an American horror cartoon, like there's not a lot. There's, you know, there's some anime horror stuff, but there's not a lot of American, like Hellboy is probably the only one that I can think of.
Maybe like the Max kind of.
Max, you know, kind of, yeah.
Like back on MTV and like that. Yeah. There's really not.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of
anime. Is like the Junji Ito stuff, but
right.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah. It's
really crazy.
Yeah. So we were pretty excited about that. And I, like a couple times we've had people asking about Johnny Reagan, but we haven't had anything go anywhere. And kind of the philosophy that Joe and I had about all the media rights kind of thing is, if it happens, it happens. It's awesome. But like our main focus is making comic books. Like, you know, we need to tell good stories through comic books, because no matter what, that's what we're going to be doing, you know? So if it happens ever, it would be fantastic. You know, the money's probably not as good as you hope, but it's probably better than what, better than what we're getting.
Better than a poke in the eye.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and that's also one of those things where you hear a lot of horror stories about, you know, comics going into production, and like David Peterson with Mouse Guard.
Yep.
Yeah, like that's just a heartbreaking story. Like they were like a week away or something from like animating this thing. They had the voice actors, you know, the studios, they had built models and everything, and they were gonna start like primary animation and then shut it down. So
he is such a super chill guy too. Like when I met him, like yeah. I was just like, oh my god. He's like, yeah, do you want me to sign this on top of the original art of this? And I was like, yes. Because he did a lot of the covers of the micro series for the Ninja
Turtles.
So
yeah.
Well, he's like, oh, check it out. This Michelangelo on top of the original artwork. I'm like, wow, you're a chill dude, man. Like, that's yeah, awesome.
He is really an awesome guy. Yeah.
Super talented. Like I was talking his ear off about like some Dark Crystal artwork that he had and all that. And I'm just like, yeah, we didn't even get to Turtles, man.
You know? Right.
It was just crazy. But let me ask you this. So what's your history with Ninja Turtles? Because we talked about Marvel and Image and all that. Turtles were at Image at one point, so there's a crossover. But what brought you to that world?
Yeah, so Turtles is one of these weird things where I came to it super late because, you know, growing up in Arkansas and Kentucky, you know, we didn't have comic store. Like the closest comic store in Arkansas was like an hour and a half away. Right.
Holy moly.
So it's like, you know, I had the spinner rack at 7-Eleven. So whatever showed up there is what my options were. And Turtles weren't hitting spinner racks in 7-Elevens back then. So it wasn't until I moved to Kentucky. I lived right outside of Fort Knox, and Fort Knox, Radcliffe, Kentucky, we had three comic shops in town. So I was like 14, 15, and, you know, I was in heaven. Like, I got three comic shops to ride my bike to. This is, you know, that's how I'm spending my Saturday and Sundays.
That's like heaven to me.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. So at one of those shops, I found like a reprint collection of the original stuff, you know, the Kevin and Peter stuff, you know, I think it was like the first trade was probably like the first five issues or something. And so I got into it that way. And that's about the same time when the cartoon started showing up on TV. So here I am. I'm like, this is really weird. Like this is very different than what I'm seeing on TV. But I was at the right age where I like both, you know?
Yep.
And was pretty excited about that. And then skip forward a lot of years. And it really wasn't until I did that issue 22 that I got back into the Turtles. And, you know, I've done like a dozen or so covers since then. And, I've kept up with the IDW stuff more than anything else. Like I actually kind of want to go back and get all the Image stuff just to see what it was all about. I think that's one of the cool things about the Turtles is there's been so many versions of them over the years. And it's like, seems like every publisher just kind of wants to put their fingerprints on them a little bit. And, but it's kind of neat that you, it's the same thing with animation studios, right? Like, I don't even know how many different cartoons there's been, but it seems like
I think we're on like six now, aren't we?
Yeah.
We got 87.
2003. 2012.
Rise. And then now we're coming out with...
Okay, so five, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to include the 2007 Turtles cartoon. The
movie, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
No. I like that movie.
I did too. I wish they would have came out with a second one. That's embarrassing.
We've had two of the four on the show. So.
Oh, it's awesome. You know,
technically. So, yeah. The Image stuff is pretty interesting. It's super polarizing because you find that people either really like it or really hate it. And the art is very like true to like Turtles form with like the Frank Fosco art. It's really cool. But yeah. You know, it's also like there's a lot of stuff in it where it's like, oh, wow, they literally blew half his face off.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing a lot of covers because Eric Larson drew a lot. He did some covers. You know, the Turtles showed up in Savage Dragon a couple issues. So yeah, so there was always, because I love Larson, there was always that kind of connection to those Image books. But I never read them at the time. But it's definitely one of those things. I don't know if IDW, so like when Marvel gets Conan, you know, they have the rights to all the Conan crap and they usually put out all the stuff. Like right now they have Star Wars and they've been putting out all the Dark Horse stuff. I wonder if IDW can put out the Image stuff, or if that's
they have two collections. Okay. So there's two different collections of the Image stuff. You can also read them right now on Comixology. If you do the digital thing, if you do the Amazon Unlimited Comixology, you can actually read all of them on there.
So. Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out because I'm definitely interested in getting that stuff.
Yeah, we have yet to really tackle that because what we're doing is going through the IDW stuff. We've done Last Ronin, and all that, but we're going chronologically through the Turtles IDW and the original Archie Turtles.
Oh, cool! Oh, nice.
That to me was like that was my inception of the Turtle world. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? This is awesome. They're intergalactic wrestling now. Okay, I'm in. You know, it's like. That was my gateway drug. So
that's awesome. That's great.
And Eric, I know you're the video game guy. So you know, was that your? I don't think I've ever asked you this, but what was your gateway into the Turtles' life?
Well, my gateway was actually probably the 87 Turtles
cartoon. Oh, nice. So the cartoon. Yeah.
But I also did have. I forget. It's like they have like book one, book two. I can't remember them now. I can't remember off my head. But there was like the four book series of, I want to say like one of them was like where they were in space with the Triceratons and all that other stuff.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then, you know, I can't remember. My wife ended up buying me one of them. And like as soon as I seen it, I was like, it instantly, and I was like, probably 6-7 years old when I had it. Unlocked
the memory inside
your head. Yeah, it absolutely unlocked the memory. It brought me to tears, man. I'm not going to lie to you. But cool. I remember reading it as like 6-7 years old, and I'm like, okay, this is pretty violent, but I like it. You know?
Yeah.
You know, but it's not like I used to go around in my backyard and ninja kick some butt and have figures out there in the dirt and out there playing. So... I mean, that's what kind of got me into Turtles, mostly the 87 Turtles, but also, you know, reading the books and, of course, you know, having all the toys. I mean, that kind of helped.
Do you collect it all, Rich? Do you collect any action figures? I see there's some stuff on the shelves back there.
Yeah, I have some stuff. I have a lot of Universal Monster things.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's kind of the most of the toys that I get. I did see the...
Were you into like the Aurora models?
I have a Wolfman one. Those are great. It's in shit condition, but it's still pretty cool. I love the Universal Monster. Actually, right above on my ceiling here, I've got all the Super 7 reaction figures.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
They just have beautiful card art on them. And like
I actually just watched the Creature from the Black Lagoon on Halloween. That was really cool. It's so well made.
Yeah. 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 It's amazing. What you look back at some of those movies and you're like, well, this is it's crazy. Like what they were making back then with the technology, you know, everything was practical effects and pretty cool stuff. Like, I don't know how they got a dude to get into a suit and,
because most of the time there's no bubbles coming up.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy.
So let's pitch this then, because you're both a writer and an artist, and you have already an inker, and you're talking about like horror crossover and all that. Sure. What about the Universal Monster Ninja Turtles, and you take that and you write that into a tale, and you can kind of do it, right? So you could do the art, or you could get one of your buddies to do the art, and you could write it.
I would love that. Would be a dream job. That would be amazing. Would that be
cool?
That would be super cool. Yeah, I am considering getting those figures. the I think are they NECA?
Yeah, they're NECA. Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, they're really, really cool.
I think I bought all of them except for the April so far, and I'm literally just sitting on them. I have not opened them. I'm waiting for the next two to come out. The Leonardo's Creature of the Black Lagoon and Raph is a Wolfman, and I'm like, awesome.
Oh,
that,
man.
That first one, the Raphael as Frankenstein was a monster, it knocked my friggin' socks off, so man. Cool. I'm like, it is just, what is this?
Yeah. You know?
And he's got like electric size, and I'm like, this is like the crazy sort of Gonzo stuff that I would have gravitated towards as a kid.
Absolutely. I am kind of shocked that they haven't put out a comic of that yet.
Yeah, yeah, it's and I mean they've done the Halloween cover like I think was it Raymond Gay that did it?
Raymond Gay, and
Jeremy Clark they did the first one, and then they did a second one like a follow up, and I mean you can't even keep them on the shelves because everybody wants some, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
That would be a cool thing, and I mean you need somebody who knows both,
right? So right, both worlds.
Maybe that person's you. So
I would be honored to do that. Absolutely.
That's cool. Have you gravitated towards a particular personality in the Turtles? Like, do you look at one? You have one that's your favorite?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about this not too long ago, and I feel like I'm kind of lame. Like, when I play D&D, I'm a paladin. You know, my favorite character.
I know where this is going.
Yeah. My favorite character in Star Wars is Luke Skywalker.
Yep.
And and Leo is my favorite. Like, I feel really lame about it, but you know, for some reason, like those guys who take responsibility and everything, like that just fits my personality. And plus katanas are pretty awesome.
Oh yeah. I mean the weapons are definitely a huge part of it. It's one of those things. I remember like transitioning from like being a fan of He-Man to being a fan of Turtles. I'm like, well, they got swords. So
right,
like, it's like He-Man. So
exactly.
No, but you know, and that's kind of fun. But yeah, I'm a huge Leo guy. He's not just my favorite turtle. He's one of my favorite comic book characters because he's got such depth of character. And I'm a big fan of the stuff that like Sophie Campbell's been doing with Leo specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm with you. Eric is a big Raph fan. You know, all the red, you know.
All the red.
I love my turtles. I mean, that's all you see in the background, right?
Yeah, turtles. Absolutely.
Mega collectors, yeah. You know, that's really fun. So, you know, with this, I want to ask you about some of these, like Johnny Raygun and Kira the Jungle Girl and stuff like that. If folks haven't really gotten into this stuff because they're just getting into you because they're hearing about your stuff now, how would you describe these things? Like, who's the audience for? Like, where can folks like find them? Like, what's the pitch, so to speak? Because this was just like my first research, and I'm like, oh, what the hell is Johnny Raygun? I'd check that out.
Yeah. So I mean, I've been doing this stuff since I was 16. So I've got a lot of creator-owned stuff, you know, under my belt at this point, and Johnny Raygun was the very first thing. It's very much so I was doing Johnny Raygun before I met my buddy Matt. I was doing it all by myself, and I was writing, penciling, inking, lettering, coloring, and doing most of that poorly, right? And then I met Matt, and Matt did a lot of things that I did poorly way better. So we split it. And he did all the lettering, and we didn't color it. It was all black and white. But we are coloring it right now, and it's going to come out next year from CEX as a trade. And it's going to collect the first 7 issues. But that's kind of an all ages thing. When I met Matt, we both had very similar writing styles, and we both like comedy. We both like Silver Age Marvel. So we always say that Johnny Raygun is kind of our love letter to the Silver Age, you know, of comic books, with like modern kind of sensibilities in it.
Does it have like a Flash Gordon sort of vibe to it, or
a little? That's how it started. I mean, I wanted to do a Flash Gordon kind of comic, you know, Buck Rogers Flash Gordon. I wanted to do a real retro sci-fi kind of thing, and it evolved. I'd read an interview or maybe I heard it from somebody or something. John Byrne had once said, and he may never have said this, I don't know. He once said, like, you know, Marvel's not going to hire me to do the X-Men, so I'm going to do the Next Men. I'm going to do my version of the X-Men, right?
Yep.
And Next Men was amazing. So I've always kind of taken that philosophy and ran with it. Like, you know, if I'm not going to get hired by these other people, I'm going to do my own version of it. And so Johnny Reagan is kind of that world where I can play. And if I want to write a Fantastic Four story, I've got characters in there that are very Fantastic Four-y. And if I want to do Captain America, I can do a Captain America. You know, I can do all those superhero stories that I want to do. But if I want to go horror, you know, it's an open, big enough world that I can go horror in it or whatever. So that's that was kind of how I built that world with Matt. And then Kyra Alien Jungle Girl was something that my buddy Craig Russo came up with. He was doing a book for what was it? Emerald City Comic Con had a yearbook, and it was, I think it was called Brutes and Babes or something like that.
Another Bart Sears. So
Oh, maybe it wasn't Brutes and Babes then. That was Bart Sears. It was like Monsters and Dames or something. The basic concept is there was a woman and a monster. And so he drew this pinup for that book, and it was a young girl in the jungle, and there was like this weird looking beast thing next to her. And I was like, oh, what are you going to do with that? And he's like, I don't know. It's, you know, it's a new thing I'm playing with, but I don't really have any plans for it. And I said, do you mind if I pitch you on a story? Like, this is, I kind of saw it as, this is my opportunity to work with somebody I really admire. Somebody who's worked for Marvel and DC, and maybe he'll want to work with me if I pitch him a good story. You know, he was working with Todd DeZego, who on Perhaponauts. You know, Todd had done Spider-Man and stuff, so I kind of figured he would just kind of be like, nah, Todd and I are gonna play with it, you know. But he liked the story enough that he gave me a chance, and I wrote this whole background for her, and we did a bunch of issues of that, and that was a lot of fun. Yeah, and then
looks really great. So I was like, oh, that looks cool.
Craig's amazing. And that's very much, you know, Craig's much more of an all ages kind of guy. So that story was very all ages. It's kind of Tarzan meets Star Wars. That's kind of how I pitch it to people, is if you're into those two things mashed up, like that's the kind of story it is.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I could see it being all ages. I mean, he was doing the Young Hellboy book, which I think he just got the last issue of not too long ago, and that's really cool, and it's not as dark, but it still is a Hellboy book.
Yes. You know?
don't let it confuse you. It is.
Yeah, that book is great. I mean, both the you know what Craig's doing and Tom Snegowski writing it, it's pretty awesome. Those guys are great, and you know it's kind of neat, kind of growing up in this industry. You know, you meet guys like Craig, and then you meet Tom, and not too long ago, you know, Craig and I and Matt Smith, who also does Hellboy stuff. We all went over to Tom's house for dinner. So it's like, you know, you got a bunch of comic nerds hanging out, having dinner at Tom's house. And Tom's house is just like a museum to comics. It's, I mean, like I've never been in a house that has more comic stuff per square inch. I mean, his kitchen is filled with comic stuff. Bathroom is filled with comic stuff. Like, there's not a room in that house that isn't filled with just, you could spend all day in each room and still probably not take all the stuff in that he's got in there. It's awesome.
I imagine Kevin Eastman's house has got to be like that. Like,
oh, just I bet. Stuff.
You know, who's that?
I said I was imagining that Eastman's house must be.
Oh, like yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always wonder about that, because, like, I know with me, like, anytime there's merchandise or anything, like, I always have it, like, I get one copy of everything, right? So, I mean, I'm sure Kevin's probably like that, where you know, he probably wants, you know, all the merch. Like watching videos of Rob Liefeld and seeing all the Deadpool stuff that he has, like it's kind of crazy, you know, how much merchandise and the Turtles merchandise. I mean, they probably made more merchandise out of that than they have any other characters in comics. Mm-hmm.
I would imagine. And I just want to put this out there. This is a very pro Liefeld artwork comic, you know, sort of podcast. Yes, we know he does pouches. Yes, we know he doesn't do feet and all that. Sure. But I was so damn impressed with the last Ronin cover that he did for Jozar. You know,
I don't think I saw that.
Oh, it was really, really cool. It came out.
Doesn't show feet.
Yeah, it does not show feet. It does not. So,
you know, yeah. He gets a bad rap.
Okay. Go back and read What If Wolverine Becomes an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Open up the second page and you see Wolverine and Wendigo, you know, and the Hulk, and you see that page and you'll know what this man is capable of.
Yeah.
And there are feet there. There are Hulk feet, there's Wolverine feet, there's Wendigo feet. It is one of the sweetest looking two-page splash pages I've ever seen in my life. It's so good.
I loved his New Mutant stuff. His New Mutant stuff I thought was awesome. He had, you know, he had other inkers on him, which I think helped. He was also, you know, he wasn't so baked that he thought, you know, I kind of feel like he knows he can get away with whatever, you know, minimal. Well,
that's like Jim Lee too. Like look at the background characters at like a pool scene in a Jim Lee book. You'll see they're all the same.
Right.
It's like, oh, okay, he's put this in other stuff.
Right.
Liefeld, it's like, oh, he's got some rich backgrounds here with some really good texturing work. And it's like he's got like individual unique characters. So it's like he's not lazy. So
well,
not accusing Jim Lee of being lazy, but he kind of is.
I will say I can't remember what issue it was. I think it was a Deadpool thing. And again, I love Rob, and I actually learn from Rob some very important like comic layout things. Like you need to put a hero shot on every page. He's the master at that, right? He puts a hero shot on everything. I went through an issue not too long. I think it was a Deadpool thing. There was literally one background in the entire book. And I was like, I went through the pages again to count. And I'm like, no, he put one background, and to call it a background was kind of generous.
Okay.
it was a crate, like a wooden crate that he put in the background. And I'm like, well, you know what? You got through the story. You're clearly, it's an action book. Like you don't need the environment in the background probably, but.
Well, it's like you look at those old books like Images Brigade or like Bloodstone or anything else like that. You're going to see it's like, wow, it actually does have a really good background in it. And it'll kind of shock you because it's all that stuff that nobody talks about.
Yeah.
Where it's like he really has the skills and all that. And I know he gets a lot of shit and all that. And some of it's warranted. I totally agree. But I'm just saying, like, in terms of everything, if you look at the talent that he has, it's there, man.
You know what? I listened to his Rob Servations podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy knows, like, he knows. He's got an encyclopedia brain for comic history. That's kind of impressive, too.
Yeah, I like a lot of those guys, like Silvestri and Valentino and Larson, like a lot of the Image guys. So that's cool. That's really cool that we got to talk about like Image stuff today. We don't usually delve into that level, mainly when we talk about the Turtles and all of that. So that's
sure. Cool.
So what's next for Rich? What are you going to be doing? I know we were talking about like con appearances, no more for the rest of the year, but what books are coming out?
Yeah, so next year, early in the year, I'm going to do a Kickstarter for Johnny Raygun. Like I said, it's the 30th anniversary of Johnny Raygun next year, which is crazy to think that it had been out 30 years ago. But coloring all that, going to put out a hardcover Kickstarter, and then it's going to go to the direct market later in the year. And then I've got another book that I'm working on. So I did a series called at Black Caravan called Gods of Brutality. with my buddy Mark Welzer. And the story behind that is it's a rock star that dies and goes to hell, and then he prays to Thor and Hercules to come and save him.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's old.
It is just I mean, it's just action fun, right? It's just a blast.
So how do you mix music into that?
Well, so we did something in the first issue where he and I made a Spotify playlist, and we had a QR code, which I think I was dumb and I didn't get like a free QR code. It got one of those ones you have to pay for. So I stopped paying for it. So the QR code doesn't work anymore. But if you go into Spotify and you look for Gods of Brutality, you can find the playlist. But we kind of thought, hey, we'll have a playlist. So you're reading the comic, like have this in the background and you can kind of get the feel.
Oh, yeah. They did that with DC Batman Metal, right?
Oh, no kidding.
They came out with a whole like a CD and like a record, like on vinyl that you could get and listen to.
Yeah, that's what we wanted to do. We just didn't have any money for that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, you have Warner Brothers music behind you. With, yeah. Like, it's yeah, like, yeah, we could just print whatever.
Yeah. You know? But my buddy Mark that worked on that with me, we're working on another book called The Bloody Ring of Dracula.
Oh.
And it's Dracula in the 1800s in Mexico as a lucha wrestler. And it's just kind of similar to Gods of Brutality. It's just ridiculous, fun action stuff.
That's so cool. And that definitely crosses over into the horror movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's go back to horror movies for a minute here. What's your horror monster of choice? What's your go-to universal horror movie?
Yeah, my favorite, it's really a toss-up between Frankenstein and the Wolfman. Like I love Frankenstein. I love the visuals of Frankenstein. But I've always liked like a werewolf. I've always liked the Wolfman. So yeah, it's between those two.
Do you have Wolfman characters in your books?
I do. I have a book called Sergeant Werewolf.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, it's that's all World War II, you know, werewolf fun. So
you go with the old school, like the pentacle on or the pentagram on the hand, or
yeah, kind of. So I did a lot of research into werewolves and like a bunch of different types of historical werewolves. When I was researching to do the book, and there's this story about this guy who supposedly like he would put a wolf pelt over himself.
Oh yeah,
and he would transform into a wolf man that way. And that's so in Sergeant Werewolf, what happens is it's World War II. These commandos are infiltrating a Nazi stronghold, and they get captured. And the leader gets shot in the head, and they're kind of put in this room that just has crates and just shit all over the place from the castle. Like the Nazis have put all the stuff from the castle in this room as like a storage thing. So they're being held in there.
They're in the Rob Liefeld background. Okay,
right. They're in the Rob Liefeld background, and there's an old wolf pelt. And so they take it and they drape it over his dead body because his guys don't want to see his poor bloody corpse there. And it brings him back to life. And so it kind of possesses him. So there's like a demon inside him that is the werewolf that.
So do you play in that Metallica's Of Wolf and Man?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And Bark of the Moon, maybe. I don't know. I'm running short on any others.
Werewolf of London.
Werewolf of London.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that one.
I don't know. I'm trying to think what a good Misfits song would be, but I'm sure they got one.
Yeah, I love the Misfits. Actually, they're one of those bands that really inspired me to do. It's funny, Johnny Reagan. Like again, it's kind of that weird sci-fi.
Yeah.
Kind of genre.
I think when I met you, I was wearing a Misfits hat.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, no, I totally dig it. That's cool.
And a tool shirt.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Good luck finding me without one. I was wearing one earlier. Yeah. I don't know. That's my weirdness though. So no, I love music. There's such a huge like crossover and all that. And that was one of the first questions I had when I met Kevin. When I was talking to Kevin Eastman, I'm like, what kind of music the Turtles listen to? He's like, what? Why are you asking that? Like, who's ever asked that before? I'm like,
that's a great question.
I'm like, well, I want to know, like, is Raff into metal? Is he into hip hop? Because back in the day, they were showing up wearing Metallica shirts.
And, right.
You know, it's like Eric Talbot's putting out stories about like this is clearly a Misfits song that they're doing. I'm like, what is going on? You know, and you know, and the coolest story was getting to talk to Steve Levine about how him and Pete and Dan Berger and Ryan Brown were all playing Mother by Danzig. And I'm like, what? You know, Pete wanted to do a Neil Young song. We did that first. Then afterwards, I start belting out Mother by Danzig. This is insanity.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, and I mean, you must have met a lot of these guys being out there.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm going to see Steve tomorrow. I was hoping Jim's not going to make it, but yeah, I'm friendly with Steve and Jim. I see them a lot. I've just recently started running into Eric a lot more. It is really cool. Like, those guys have, you know, I see Ben every once in a while because he's in a studio. Like, he and Schmalky used to share a studio, so I used to run into him a lot more. But you know, now his studio is across the hall from Joe, and I think he's moving downstairs to an even bigger space now. So
his space looks huge from the pictures that he shared online. It's huge.
Yeah, he's moved into a bigger one, I guess. Oh,
I can't wait to see it. Like, the first one he moved into in this mill building was enormous. The last one that he was in was even bigger than that. And from what I've heard, the one that he's moving into now is even bigger than that one. So yeah, I mean, he's doing great right now. So he's moving on up for sure. He is the George Jefferson of Turtle Comics.
I wonder where it's going to go. Like, is it going to be like baseball where it's like he stays with the Turtles for his whole career? Or is it going to be like he gets traded up to the big leagues and, you know, like he goes on to work on Spider-Man or Daredevil or something? So
Turtles is big leagues. What are you talking about?
Well, it's big leagues as far as you can go in independence. It's the biggest independent comic of all time. Take that one.
Yes.
That's okay. McFarlane knows.
Absolutely.
That's cool. That's awesome. So where do you like folks to follow you in terms of social media, in terms of, where people can request commissions and things like that? What's the best way to go about it?
Sure. I'm mostly on Facebook and a little bit on Instagram. Then I've got my own website. It's a really long ass name. It's Project Pandora Entertainment.com.
Okay. I'll put a link to it. So no worries. Cool. I'll put a link to it in the show notes and all that.
Cool. Yeah. And that's where I've got a store up there. You can get back issues and of a lot of the stuff that we talked about today. And
Any plans for action figures for Johnny Raygun or Kira?
I would love to get some made. We do not have any plans for any of that. We did have a Julius Black figure, like, custom made. I think we had like 12 of them made or something from the Electric Black. So that was really cool to have that. I wish we could get some action figures. It'd be pretty neat, but no plans for it right now, at least.
Maybe get some bronze statues or something, you know.
Yeah, I'll take anything.
Yeah, that'd be great, you know, to have some sort of physical representation of something you've done.
Oh, totally. I had a guy make me some custom Johnny Raygun figures out of the, what was it, the DC Justice League. Do you remember all those really nice, like, the Bruce Timm designed Justice League cartoons?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, I had a friend that was customizing a lot of those, and he did a custom Johnny Raygun and a couple other characters from the Johnny Raygun world. So that was really, really cool.
That's cool. Would he use like an Adam Strange figure or something, or
trying to remember? I mean, I think he had to customize the hair, because the hair on Johnny is just ridiculous. So I don't remember none of the heads.
Three bald guys. It's all ridiculous.
It was really, really weird. I don't remember. Like, oh, he actually made I might have commissioned him to do like four or five now that I think about it. He made a lot of figures out of those. I got to dig them up. I think they're in a box somewhere.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun to see. You post those on your Instagram. See?
I should definitely post those on my Instagram. Yeah, I always need content.
So I'm going to make sure I'm going to look for your Gods of Brutality playlist and also put that up in the show notes.
Yeah. It'd be awesome.
I think that'll be pretty fun. Eric, maybe we should ask him about some pizza. What do you think?
Should I ask him? Yeah, definitely. Well, go ahead and do the pineapple thing.
you're a learned man. You've been to Arkansas and you've lived in Kentucky and all that. Now you're back in New Hampshire in the land of what I would say pretty decent pizza, right?
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah.
What's your go-to pizza topping?
I give you a little pizza background on me. My mom was the manager of a Pizza Hut. So when I was a kid, after Little League games or whatever, you have the pizza party at Pizza Hut. Mm-hmm. So that's the pizza I grew up on. I am a supreme pizza kind of guy, so I like put everything on there, like as much shit as you can fit on there. But if we're just talking
peppers, onions, yeah, pepperoni, meatballs,
No pineapple, right?
You know what? I don't mind pineapple on pizza.
That's a partial credit, okay? Because I like it. Eric doesn't.
it's not something I order myself. My wife likes it. She gets what is it? It's it's an odd combination. It's like onion and pineapple or something, which are like two things that she doesn't like on anything else. Like she will not eat pineapple by itself.
But she eat it on pizza.
But she'll eat it on pizza. She digs that. So, but yeah. I think if I had to pick like just one topping, it'd be pepperoni.
Yeah, I think that's...
Keep it classic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. So your mom was the manager of a Pizza Hut. Did you ever have any interesting Pizza Hut related merchandise from being in the 80s there?
Yeah, actually. So in my kitchen, so... Early 80s Pizza Hut, there was a little Pizza Hut man. I don't know if he had a name or not, but he kind of looks like Mario. Like he's weird looking little Mario character. And he's got this big pizza like oven stick, right? And they were updating the look of her Pizza Hut. And the door had this giant wooden bust of this guy on it, right? So my grandfather was one of the guys who did the renovations. He took that pizza guy, and it's kind of stayed in my family, and now it's in my kitchen hanging up. It's a weird thing that I don't even – I'm, like, blind to it now. But when I think about it, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. But, yeah, I used to – that's actually one of the things I started drawing on was the back of Pizza Hut, table – placemats or whatever. They were blank on the back, and my mom would just bring home a giant box of them, if they
instead were spending money on paper.
So I had like tons and tons of Pizza Hut paper. If I go back through some of my old drawings, like I probably still have a couple things that if I flipped it over, it's
so you're drawing werewolves on the back of Pizza Hut.
Any turtles?
Probably not then.
No, I don't have any turtle stuff from back then, unfortunately.
That's really cool. It all ties back. That's the big theme of this podcast. It all ties back to pizza. There's something about it. It's just that unifying sort of food.
Absolutely. Delicious. So
that's pretty cool. Like I said, I'm gonna post some links here for your other stuff, and we're excited. We're super excited to have you. We'll have to have you on again. And thanks for joining us, Rich.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate talking to you guys.
And folks, you can check out the links in on the page for everything that we're talking about. Hopefully, I'll be able to find the playlist for you. But
I can send it to you.
Oh, okay, good. So I'll have it. Anyone who's still listening, stay tuned for your pizza recipe of the day. And with that, we'll all wish you a goodbye.
See you guys.
Bye.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. We have very active lifestyles. It's not all wandering the countryside aimlessly or scaring passing motorists. And we all love a good cup of joe. And there's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. Bold, robust, delicious. It's coffee that can wake the dead. With over a dozen different roasts and flavors, Deadly Grounds can satisfy the most finicky of coffee addicts. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door!
Oh, they're so disgusting.
Hi, this is Adam, a.k.a. Casey Jones from Casey Jones Livewire, and you're listening to Epic Tales from the Sewers. Time for a knuckle sandwich, punk.
It's pizza time.
And now, in a segment that we call Pizza Time, where we discuss any Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle or pizza-related food, I give you Pizza Time.
Hey everyone, get ready for your pizza recipe of the day. We have Rocksteady Rolls. Makes 12 rolls. These rolls will satisfy the mightiest of appetites, even if it's a half-rhino hero or villain. Rocksteady, a bad guy's recipe never tasted so good. Ingredients: 1 pound ball of pizza dough, homemade or store-bought, extra virgin olive oil for brushing, 1/2 cup no-cook tomato sauce or store-bought marinara, plus extra for dipping, 2/3 cup shredded low-moisture mozzarella cheese, 1/4 cup sliced black olives, 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh basil, 30 pepperoni slices, fine sea salt and freshly ground black pepper, 1/2 cup grated Parmesan cheese. Instructions: line a heavy-duty rimmed baking sheet with parchment paper. On a lightly floured work surface, roll out the dough into a 9 by 12 inch rectangle. Step 3. Brush the dough with a little olive oil and then spread the sauce evenly on top, leaving a 1/2 inch border dough all around. Sprinkle on the mozzarella, olives, basil, and top with pepperoni slices. Season with a little salt and pepper. Step 5. Starting from one of the long sides, roll the rectangle into a long, tight log. Step 6. Place the log in a prepared baking sheet and refrigerate for at least 20 minutes or until chilled through. Step 7. Preheat the oven to 375 degrees Fahrenheit. Step 8. Remove the log from the fridge and cut it crosswise into 12 1-inch thick rolls. Arrange the rolls cut side up on your baking sheet. It's okay if they touch. Step 9. Sprinkle the rolls with Parmesan cheese and bake for 20 to 30 minutes or until the cheese has melted and the crust is golden brown. Step 10. Remove the rolls from the oven and let them cool for 5 minutes. Serve warm with extra pizza sauce for dipping. This has been your pizza recipe of the day, Rocksteady Rolls.
Cowabunga, dudes!
Thank you for listening to the Epic Tales from the Sewers podcast. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were created by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. This podcast has no affiliation with Eastman, Laird, Mirage Studios, IDW Studios, Archie Comics, or Nickelodeon Studios. This podcast is a member of the Dorkening Podcast Network. Check out thedorkening.com for other podcasts. Epic Tales from the Sewers is recorded by Justin Cooper and Eric Will.
Greetings and shabibins! We are the Retro Reductibus Cephala Podcast, a long-form bi-weekly show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome.
Yeah, that sounds good, but I don't know what all those words mean.
I think what Parasite seems trying to say is that on Retro Reductibus, we explore a range of retro goodness, from toys, video games, and movies, to cartoons, and even snacks and school lunches.
Oh.
And we do it all with a positive spin, a slew of killer guests, and some very adult language.
And you know what else is cool?
No.
This crazy show is part of the Dorking Podcast Network with new episodes every Tentacle Tuesday.
What's that?
And if waiting 2 weeks for a new episode gives you a sad, know that we drop bonus episodes all the time, like the off-format Crow's Nest and an interview series we call The Brick.
You can listen to to Retro Red Octopus on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any app that's cool enough to carry the only show that celebrates all the things that make growing up awesome.
It took me 10 years to make the perfect man cave.
And then we took it over.
And we made it into the multiversal chamber.
Then I started my own podcast.
And we took that over too.
And we're the co-hosts, the Multiverse Kids.
Yeah, and I'm the dad, the geeky dad. And every week, we what?
We review the movies, shows, and books.
Games and toys.
Yeah, and sometimes we even have a special guest. So, join us every week on the Geeky Dad Podcast.
Hello, intrepid listeners. This is the Generation Playlist Podcast, a podcast about music where we are your guides through a particular group or artist.
We talk about the music, and then we make a customized playlist to share with you, our listeners. And you can check us out wherever you listen to podcasts and find our playlists on Spotify.